one of you came here thinking it was cord killers. We get it. It happens all the time. Don't be embarrassed. That's a different show where we talk about cord cutting and the devices you use and the services you use. The whole reason for that is so we can watch stuff. And that's what this show is about. This show is about we just watch something and we can't not talk about it. It's time for spoiler in time. We will be spoiling episode 10 of season 5 of Justified. That is our library show. We'll also spoil episode 1, season 1 of Legion, because Bryce and Brian have both watched it, as have I. And we're keeping up currently with The Expanse. We'll talk about episode 8, season 2 of that. I'm Tom Merritt. He's Brian Brushwood.
Hello. But more importantly, we got to check in on the winter movie draft.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Or as I like to call it, has Brian hit $1 billion yet?
Oh, I'm very close. I'm $12 million from hitting a billion. I'll tell you what, man, nobody believed me when I was shouting Logan to the ceiling. It turns out I was right. I was right.
Remember that time million. I was right? Biggest so far since Sing, which got $269 billion, and then after that, really just Rogue One and Doctor Strange are the only ones that are ahead of it, and it could actually catch up with Doctor Strange at 232. May not. You are definitely getting the 12. What is it? 18 million, 12 million that you need to hit a billion.
I think I'm definitely crossing a billion.
There are 11 days left in the winter movie draft. You need to average a million a day.
All I do is win, Tom. I won in
no
my
no matter what. What?
That's all I do. Between me and Justin, we had a side bet about whether or not Logan would make more than $170 million. Guess what it did? I won the movie draft, and I bet Justin is happy that I'll be his partner in the summer movie draft.
In fact, that's happening this week. We are going to draft for the summer movie draft. So next week we'll have our first overlap where the winter draft won't technically be over, although it's all over, but the counting. And yet the summer movie draft will be on its way. I'm excited.
Yeah, man. It'll be good. Good.
Let's move into The Expanse, wherein Amos has a hard night, Holden and Naomi meet Prax, the refugee who had a hard ride, and Fred and Drummer have a hard day.
It's so weird to talk about this with you because you've already read the book, so you don't have any real surprises coming your way. But like that moment that they loaded everybody in, and then they singled out the one guy saying, "Sorry, inners only." And then and you felt like that guy was being excluded from the group. And then you find out that the group was being just blown out the airlock. That was a gut punch of a moment.
First of all, I don't think it's a spoiler beyond. I know it's spoiler in time, but we try not to spoil books if you're only watching TV. I don't think it's a spoiler because you've already watched this part of the TV show to say that Prax's storyline is different in the book.
What?
He doesn't leave Ganymede in the book. Oh. So this whole refugee story is a whole new storyline. So when they got there, I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. And as soon as the belter stopped him and said, nope, inners only, I was like, oh, crap, he's going to space him. He's going to space the inners.
Oh, my
like,
God.
It just hit me. I'm like, the only reason he would stop a belter from going in there is because something bad's going to happen. Otherwise, he wouldn't care because he's a belter. He's not going to be prejudiced for the inners.
Yeah. Well, but they did a good job of framing that in such a way that it's like it definitely felt like he was the one being excluded and everybody else was getting something, whatever it was. And yeah, it turns out what they got was
they
death.
Needed to make it look that way for the inner for to make sense that the inners would all go in willingly. Right.
Yeah. No, it was way good. It's a great show, Tom. I don't know if you know this, but The Expanse, it's pretty good.
Expanse. Tell me more. So I know we didn't get a lot of Amos in this episode necessarily, but just how awesome was his walk of shame, which didn't have much element of shame, through the middle of Tycho Station?
Hold on. Walking back from what was
so it? He comes out and he's obviously wearing someone else's jacket because it doesn't fit.
Oh, yeah.
Alex comes up and is like, hey, man, You know, got to talk to you. And Amos is like, no, I'm not talking to you. I'm done.
Yeah. No. I'll tell you what, Amos is, it's awesome to get to know these characters enough that their archetypes start to become more and more apparent. Right. And it's like, Amos truly is this, I don't want to say soulless, but certainly remorseless, badass. And,
I mean, that's a good way of putting it. It's funny when I read the books, I'm having a harder time these days keeping the Amos I used to imagine from this Amos. And they're not that different. They just kind of, the Amos from the book I imagined is a little bit older and even a little bulkier. But this Amos is so compelling and he's so true to that character. And soulful, but remorseless is a really, really good way of describing him.
Yeah. It's a bit like the difference between book Tyrion and show Tyrion, with Tyrion Lannister and Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, because it's the same inner spirit, just a little bit. The one on TV is a little prettier. That's, you know, than what I imagine.
It's fine.
Yeah. Fred and Drummer, they, you know, we kind of saw this coming. We knew that the Belters were not happy with Fred, and that they were going to turn against him. And so they try to seize the station. And how did you feel about that assault by Holden's team?
The assault when Holden's
when they come in and save Fred's bacon, basically after Drummer's bleeding out.
Oh yeah. No. It's great. Again, it's like, I almost don't even want to talk all this stuff through with you because I know, you know how it all ends up and I don't want to,
but again,
read your
some
expressions.
Of these things are different. And I don't remember if this happened on Tycho Station, but I will not betray anything. What is the thing that you don't want to talk about?
Well, just whether or not. So are the rules that they've set up so far is, we know that nobody's sacred. We saw Miller get killed, right? And that was a moment. It feels like we're meant to coalesce around the four core members of the Rocinante, right? Fred Johnson, though, is a bit of a wild card on the periphery, and I like him as a character. I want him to stick around, but I feel myself emotionally keeping distance because I just feel like there's every probability they're going to kill him off or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if they kill people in the TV series that they don't kill in the books.
We've already seen that happen on Game of Thrones, right?
And Game of Thrones with that route. Both of them did. So I don't think I can say if someone is safe or not. I think some people may stay alive that should have been dead. In fact, I wasn't sure until Miller went if they were going to follow that storyline. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is interesting and it's fun.
Yeah. It's way good. What was our
Does clip? It stick in your mind though, that the guy who plays Fred, you know, Cuddy from The Wire, and he was in The Walking Dead, like he never really sticks around on shows.
Yes.
Is that what's bugging you? I'm wondering.
I don't think that specifically. I think the show's gone out of its way to really make it clear that nobody's sacred, that everything is in service of the story, and your favorite person might not be around forever.
And I'm like way intrigued with Prax now because he is more prominent and in a different place than he was in the books. And
Prax is the Asian guy, right?
He's the refugee. Yeah. He's carrying the soybean plant with
but
him.
By the way, I chatted about this on Weird Things. How fun is it that because this story takes place in a world where there's only really three, you know, allegiances, there's Earthers, Belters, and Martians, as a result, race doesn't mean what it means to us in the 21st century, which means they have an excuse to put to break patterns of racial, when we think of a leading man, it tends to be a white European, right? And so as a result, like seeing Prax and following so many Asians, but in my mind, they're like, no, they're Belters. It's fun to to have race mean nothing at all.
Prax and Denise, right? Where you're like, Prax and Denise, they're both Asian, right? So they're both the same. And it's like, oh no, Denise was from Earth.
Yes.
She's an entirely different race than Prax.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's the thing is, your race in this world isn't your skin color.
Correct.
It's how you talk and your body type. Are you thin and skinny? You're probably a belter. Are you short and squat? You're an earther. You know, are you somewhere in between? Maybe Martian.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially if you speak with a Texas accent.
And that's the other thing too, man. What a fantastic job. You know, it's like Earth, you know, definitely has that Western Californian patois, right? And then we had talked about how Martians all have that Texas twang, that frontier mentality. But the Belter patois is just wonderful. It's hypnotic and strange and exotic, just like the fictional race they represent.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on the Expanse before we trundle along to?
No. What was our big cliffhanger at the end of this one? It's so funny because they
well, it's basically that they have found evidence that there is still a protomolecule. Naomi's worried that it's the protomolecule torpedo that she hid away, and then they located on Ganymede, and so she's sigh of relief. It's not the one that I hid away. And Prax is from Ganymede, so they think he might have a clue as to why there still is protomolecule there even after it was bombarded.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, let's move on to Legion. We're just going to talk about the first episode, although Bryce and I have both watched more than that. Brian, you just dived in, and you watched the first episode twice.
Yeah, well, I watched it once, just me, and then it was so good, I was like, well, Bonnie, you should watch this, and I knew the only way that I could get her to watch it was to sit down and watch it again with her, and so we did. It was fascinating, though. The first time, you watch it, and you're like, this is good. The second time, you notice the astonishing attention to detail there, that opening segment with baby David in there. If you look to the bottom left of baby David, one of his action figures is of the yellow eyed man. And then and we mentioned this during the show, you know, you see the yellow eyed man start to enter when he's about to commit suicide and so on. It was just utterly adorable, Tom. It was utterly human and sweet and wonderful. And I loved finding out that Lenny was originally written to be a man's role, but they just, what's her name, just decided to be like, no, don't change anything. Change literally nothing. Like, especially when she's talking about, like, oh, man, being a girl, having them titties and all this stuff. Like that was an odd moment to have a woman talking that way, but it worked. Everything about this worked. And like I said on the show, the rest of this series can be total garbage and it can all become a hot mess and I won't care. I will be thankful that this pilot exists because it's one of the best pilots I've ever seen.
I don't think it becomes qualitatively different. And as I mentioned on the show, I watched the first episode and liked it enough. It was wanting to go back, but just hadn't found time for it. And my wife kind of wanted to watch it. And so we watched it. And then I watched the second episode. It frustrates me at times. I am fascinated with this because it is so complex and so intriguing and challenging. But then sometimes it gets so clever about itself that I'm like, all right, guys, we get it. You're really smart. You've got a really complex story. But maybe just, go a little bit in a straight line for once. But that only happens while I'm watching it. When I think back on the story, it all coalesces into this beautiful picture in my head. And I love various things that I can't talk about because they happen in later episodes, but they are very good, and you'll realize this and I think your example of the yellow-eyed man is one of those realizations of setting things up that you don't realize you need to know until later.
Yeah. Well, and they do and plus, like for example, watching it a second time, the moment where the two of them exchange consciousnesses—that's English.
They exchange brains.
Yeah, like that scene you can tell the first time watching through, it's like, okay, something's happened, and I can tell that one of them is really upset, and I don't necessarily know why. And to the second time, knowing everything through and kind of watching it through the lens of, you know, Bonnie's new eyes, it was a lot of fun, I guess, is all I'm saying.
Also, I was really, really upset at first, that first time through, that Aubrey Plaza's character suffered damage in the blowing up of the hospital. And I was very pleased when she showed up in his brain, even if it is just as a hallucination. But man, that also is one of the telling bits of this series, which is he crazy? Or does he have mutant powers, or both?
Well, so as best, and this is again why a second viewing was worth it, because, like, you know, there's lots of jumping forward and backward chronologically. It's clear that the parts that matter, everything is past remembering, except for him at the facility being interrogated. That's actually happening in the moment, and then you get to that moment where, you know, they bust him out, and you get to that ridiculous fight scene at the end. Bad. It's so bad, right?
The CGI is so bad.
I kind of adored how cartoonish it was. The CGI didn't bother me. What bothered me was the faux fisticuffsmanship, you know, like the punch, kick, I'm beating you up. Like, yeah, that was the bad part.
I feel like they're getting too clever. Like, okay, I know you dressed everybody in 60s clothes. And yes, that is how they fought on 60s television shows. I'm not sure that works for me or not.
So you think that was an intentional decision, an artistic choice?
I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I could figure, right?
Yeah. I hadn't even considered that. That's pretty good. Bryce, what say you?
About just the whole first episode?
Yeah.
Like, it's really good. It's a really good episode, and I like the questions that it poses of, like, hey, sometimes superpowers manifest in ways that we would, you know, classify as mental illness, and, like, that interaction is actually really interesting, especially in what is supposed to be the X-Men universe, which is has a lot of parallels to the struggle of minorities throughout time. So I think the first episode is a really, like you mentioned, that it's a great pilot. It is a really nice single story. And I think it does a good job of setting up episodes to come. That's probably where I'll leave that. I watched 5 episodes in the past 24 hours.
Okay, so all right. I'm gonna dive. Unfortunately, is bad news, gentlemen. It was good enough that Bonnie said, "We're either gonna watch this together, or we're not, or you're gonna watch it, and I'm not." And I'm like, ah, damn it. It may take a while for me to get caught up.
Look, this is why I'm a big proponent, Brian, of us having one library show and one currently airing show that we commit to. It's because everything else gets so complicated. Because same thing, like if we both try to watch Legion as for spoiler in time, it's going to change our marital relationships. Because I binged on this because Eileen wanted to binge on it, and we caught up, and then I don't know the next time there's a new episode out if she's going to be like, oh, no, I want to watch The Voice tonight. We'll catch up on that later. Like, will it get put off? Like, it's just it's always a negotiation when there's those joint watch shows.
Yeah. Well, the plan is over the next week, I'm hoping that me and Bonnie will both get caught all the way up and we can talk it through and it can become one of our ongoing shows.
Yeah. So that's cool. And even then, like, maybe Brian gets ahead of me because I'm waiting for Eileen. So this is one we will talk about as it comes.
Yeah.
But your service level agreement from Spoiler and Time Enterprises is guaranteed justified in The Expanse every week.
I thought you meant I didn't realize you meant the show that Justified. I thought you were just trying to work in the adjective Justified.
It didn't work that way. I didn't mean it that way. It's pretty genius. So speaking of Justified, any more on Legion before we move on?
No, it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. God, like I love somebody on Twitter was saying that You know what's great is that the new attitude with X-Men properties is like, screw it. Try anything. Try. Sure. Let's take a Wolverine franchise and make it a cowboy Western. Sure. Let's take Wes Anderson meets the X-Men. Why not? Let's go with all that. It's great.
Yeah. We got so many good shows. We got American Gods coming up.
I hear Believe the Hype, by the way. They showed the first episode here at South by Southwest, and the buzz was very, very good on that.
Yeah, so there's lots of good stuff. Game of Thrones is going to be coming back in July. All right, let's go to Justified Episode 10, Season 5, wherein Raylan hunts the crows, Ava and Boyd strike out on their own paths, and we get the return of Dickie Bennett. I thought Dickie was gone forever. I was actually kind of pleased to see him come back here.
It was...
Because, you know... Brian, I love the way he talks.
Do you?
I do. Sorry. I don't know why. Just hold on. You gotta like his pattern of speech.
It's fine. I'll tell you what I don't care for is let's just get the Ava storyline out of the way. I have zero interest in all of this. It's like I am mentally switched off the moment we go back to prison. I don't care. Don't care.
Like, is the that only... because you hate prisoners?
No, it's because we've already seen this story told better elsewhere, right?
I mean, no. This is a okay. I think I know what you're saying. They're not trying to tell that story though. The story here is Ava is going to try to go her own way because she's cut off from Boyd. And is that going to make things worse for Boyd or into herself or not? And I think that's a fair story to tell.
Yes. Also not very interesting to me.
Fair enough. I don't love this storyline either. It doesn't bother me though, because I just see it as an offshoot of the Boyd storyline. Where I tend to side with you is I don't need to get to know a bunch of these characters because they're in prison, and either Ava's going to stay there, in which case, why am I bothering? Or she's going to get out, in which case I don't need to know these other people. They're exactly. Not going to play in the future.
Exactly. Also, while we're at it, like, what am I supposed to be feeling about Wendy Crowe at this point? Like, am I supposed to like her? Like, I vaguely like the fact that she has expressed an interest in getting out of this lifestyle, and that his, who's the bully Crow? The
Daryl.
Yeah. I know I'm supposed to hate Daryl, and I know I'm supposed to view Boyd as this delightfully engaging wild card, but meanwhile, like there's so many characters. And I'm not saying you have to tell me how to feel about all of them, but I do tend to like it when I know where characters stand. Like, that's one of the great things about, House of Cards is this is the chessboard. This is the Game of Thrones. This is the chessboard. These are the pieces. This is each of their special powers. Let me set up an interesting scenario. But the problem with this is that there are so many characters that have gone from like, well, this is definitely a piece of garbage to, I kind of like them. It's not very, and unfortunately, this is definitely the protagonist. I don't know. He's also kind of a piece of garbage. Like, and I'm just like, well, I don't know how to even feel about Raylan. And it's like, and they couldn't be louder about telegraphing that Art's about to die any second.
Although we really didn't get much about that this episode. I was waiting at the end when Art finally shows up and goes, well, Raylan, I guess I have to thank you. And I'm like, okay, say it, because I'm 2 days from retirement. And he didn't actually say it.
Yeah, so
I'm
yes, like, all right, exactly, fine. Right? So I feel adrift in a way that I'm not a fan of right now. I'm not having the best time.
You're supposed to think Wendy Crowe is pretty.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I think you're supposed to feel sympathy for her because she's caught in a bad situation. She's tried to distance herself from it, and even denied her own son as a way of protecting him and distancing him from it. And now she's can't get out. And that's probably her story the whole time. Whether that's working for you or not is a whole different matter. But that's kind of the way I see her story.
Yeah. All right.
Especially when Daryl starts just beating the crap out of her, right? You know, like, oh, okay, now this is what she's had to deal with. This is why she's trying to get away.
Well, and yeah, you've heard me use the phrase the mushy middle quite a bit on the show over the years. And it's definitely one of those things where I feel like there are two characters, maybe three. Raylan's current girlfriend is, I guess, good because she has a job that helps kids.
Yeah, man, but you don't want her to be good or bad. I know you don't. So, you know, it's not just whether they're good or bad. It's that you don't know what their direction and purpose is. I think that's the problem with her.
Well, and right? That's the thing is you could be either good or bad and have me like you a lot and really be interested and happy to see you on the screen. What you can't be is confusing. And there's a lot of confusing characters.
I don't really, though. I don't mind if I can't tell if someone's good or bad. I don't need that. In fact, I find it boring if everybody's clearly good or bad.
Sure.
Probably well, too, right?
But
to me, it's more like, do I know their purpose and direction? Do I know what they think they are and why they're doing what they're doing? And with her, I feel like she's just a prop piece so that Raylan has a love interest when they need it. And so Kendall had a place to run to when they needed it, but I don't know what drives her.
Right. Or what her skill set is, or whether she a badass or a softie.
Working
or
with kids, which what? Works with Kendall, but why doesn't work with Raylan at all.
Yeah. I did absolutely adore every second Mary Steenburgen was on the screen. Like she's great. I love this idea of this badass late 50s cleaner woman, like fixing stuff.
Who was she?
She is the chick that is freaking what's his name? Why am I blanking on?
She do in the episode?
She basically promises to fix everything for Win Duffy.
She's Catherine Hale.
Oh, right. From Last Man on Earth. Yes.
Right.
Yes. She's from many, many things, but she's currently in Last Man on Earth. Yes. No, absolutely. I'd forgotten all about that scene where he goes to her.
It is very isolated. It's all by itself.
Very flirtatious, you know, but there's also a line for business. Yeah, that was great.
It's going to be $400,000 is what it's going to take. I'm going to fix your problems and all that stuff. She owned all of that. And you could tell, like, that's... It's almost a problem. Like, scenes like that elevate the show so much that it makes it clear that, like, wait, why is the show elevated? Oh, I guess the rest of the show wasn't very good.
You know what? Here's my problem with this season altogether. And this episode is emblematic of it with Raylan. Raylan's on the hunt, right? He's hunting the crows. He's in this episode a lot. He's a pivotal player in this episode. I don't feel we advanced Raylan's character, and he's the main character here, right?
Man, I mean, that character has been coasting and adrift for a long time. I feel like they could kill him right now, and the show could keep on going, and I would see very little difference.
I think that Raylan is supposed to be having, and we've talked about this before, having that ease into doing things that aren't by the book. Because why not? And we see that happen in little bits in this episode. He's kind of just doing things on his own. And he is going to shoot Danny Crow and is saved by dumb luck when Danny stumbles into the grave that he was digging for the dog. And God rest Chelsea's soul.
Right.
So I get that, but... All this was, hey, this Raylan that we've brought to you slowly in this season is still here doing those things, right? There wasn't a moment that changed him or moved him. Even in his discussion with Art, there was no revelation of like, I'm starting to realize that maybe I'm headed in a bad direction. And we are at episode 10.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what this season is about.
There's no core bad guy. I guess it's about here's the Crow family. That's the most I've gotten out of it. I mean, look, we're in it, but at this point, I'm trying to reconcile what I'm seeing with the level of breathless enthusiasm with which people told us we had to experience Justified, right?
Yeah. I've gotten close to that level a few times in previous seasons. There've definitely been some killer episodes, and I still love this character. I love Raylan. I think he's a great character, even if they haven't done much with him this season. I love Art. I want to see more of Raylan working as a marshal in Art's employ, and that whole scene. We barely see his partners, and they're in the main credits. I want to see a main threat that he has to work against. And it's kind of the crows, but it's really more himself. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like when you see some of these writers who've been in a plot for a long time, sometimes they're writing their way out of where they got themselves towards something else. And that's what I'm hoping is happening, is they're furiously like, we have to write our way through the crows, and we have to write our way out of Ava and Boyd and get us back to a place for a good story. And maybe that's what we get in season six.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, that is it for this episode of Spoiler in Time, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon, and we will spoil you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.